afternoon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair at the Gene Voss Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon. Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band. And streaming live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world, all the way around to the Kingdom of Sweden and Stockholm, and all of the ships and aircraft and stations in between that are all about their father's business, rescuing the hapless mariner. The start of the broadcast today is traditionally my greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, and I do so today. And in particular, do I send greetings to those friendships which have been reignited, I think is the right word. Last week, I talked a little bit about this, and I urged all of Captain Joe's people who had friendships that had gone maybe dormant. They had not heard from these friends for a long time, many years possibly, that maybe the time is here to reach out. And the reason that I gave then and I give now is that it is not given to us to know the day nor the hour when people that we love are going to be taken from us, some often before their time, or do we not know the day nor the hour when it is time for us to cross the bar? When our time comes, we want to be sure that we have taken care of all of the Irish penance in our life, all of the loose ends that are dangling out there. Irish penance, by the way, is not a pejorative term. It is an old sailor's term. It goes back centuries, and it means a piece of line that is flapping in the breeze or a flag that is not properly secured. And every day that I would come aboard any of the ships under my command, I would inspect very carefully for Irish pennants, because I felt very strongly that any Irish pennants that were showing were a sign of sloppiness and unseamanlike behavior on the part of the ship, and in particular of her captain, and I was certainly not going to be a party to that. If you have Irish pennants in your life, and I will tell you that my mother Toots died with a couple things that were not taken care of, then now's the time to listen up from the captain's chair and think about, and then if you feel it's indicated, to take some action. The binnacle list today is one of static, in that none of Captain Joe's people that have been reported to me anyway, and reports do come in to me, you can be certain of that, when one of Captain Joe's people cross his or her bar. None of those things have happened. But there are people who are in nursing homes. There are people who have had surgeries and need to follow up with those with the proper kind of physical therapy. There are people who have not yet been inoculated but intend to. And those are the Irish penance of life. If you are going to get the shots, now's the time to do it. I am not your father. I am not your mother. I am your Captain Joe, and I use the privileges that you have given me as your captain to remind all hands that it is time to deal with some of these things. I am reminded of Vietnam. I'm often reminded of Vietnam and the things that happened there and the people with whom I served and sailed and for whom I am enormously grateful, starting with the captain that I served and who I relieved after the end of our tour in the combat zone. And starting with Captain Westfall and working all the way down to the newest sailor that came to us out of boot camp, I'm enormously grateful for the expressions of being proper shipmates that came with that. And so I am reminded this time when I'm talking about things that need to be done, like getting your shots, that once a week, all hands had to line up and take the Primaquine tablet for malaria. Master at Arms always had a list of the people in ship's company, and I, XO, was always at the head of that line to make sure that everybody else was falling in behind me. So, Binnacle List, let us keep it that way in terms of taking care not only of ourselves, but taking care of those for whom we are accountable and are and for whom we have responsibility. The book this week is turned out to be a much more special one than I originally thought. The title of it is The Challenge. It is by ABC, Alpha Bravo Charlie Whipple, who is also the author of the book called The Yankee Whalers in the South Seas. This book purports to be a history of the 10 years of the clipper ship era in the United States. But it turned out to have buried in it, and you had to read some of it pretty carefully, but it had buried in it some little nuggets of things that struck a very responsive chord for me. And so I'm going to read a little excerpt, because this is exactly the way that I felt about all of the ships that I was privileged to command, but not the way that the clipper captains felt about their crews. It was a hard-driving way to go to sea. And so here's the excerpt. It says, it's in a chapter called A Special Breed of Captain. I believe, of course, that all captains are a special breed because they would not be there. They would not have the privilege of sitting in the captain's chair. By the way, no one else except the captain sits in the captain's chair on the bridge. And no one else uses the binoculars that are in the box that says either CO for commanding officer or captain. Nobody wears the captain's battle helmet. It says captain on the front. So here's the excerpt from this chapter in the book of the week, The Challenge, by ABC Alpha Bravo Charlie Whipple. And it reads like this. Most of all, the clipper captain had to be one with his ship. To a greater extent than his contemporaries in the rest of the merchant marine, he had to have a sixth sense. His ship talked to him even when he was in his bunk, her creaking timbers or groaning masts telling him whether she was moving well down the plotted course or straining to the point of damage. A change in the heel of the vessel could wake him from a sound sleep. He usually had an extra compass swinging on gimbals. There's that word gimbals again. We're going to use that word gimbals instead of the less attractive word Google. But it also has gimbals are axes such that the compass, when it's mounted in gimbals, will always remain level even when the ship is rolling very deeply. He usually had an extra compass swinging on gimbals above his bunk so he could check the course immediately on waking. I always had a compass repeater over the bunk where I could always see it. And by the thrumming of the rigging, he could tell without going on deck when it was time to shorten sail, or, more important, when to loose more sail, because, of course, these ships were driven very hard to make the shortest possible passages. Although always he had to keep his vessel driving forward at top speed and at the knife edge of disaster. And it goes on to talk a little bit more about how clipper captains would stress the ships and the crews to the limit of breaking and would accept the risks of that happening. But read that particular passage because it talks about a captain being one with his ship. One of my favorite books, and I've talked about it many times on this program, is The Cruel Sea by Nicholas Montserrat. And it talks about one of the corvettes that were part of the escort fleets in the Battle of the Atlantic. And the captain, Captain Erickson, who was a lieutenant commander in the Royal Naval Reserve, he wasn't even a regular naval officer. He'd been a merchant captain before he came into the RNV, the Royal Navy Volunteer Reserve, RNVR. And it talks about how he was connected to his ship in such a way that he knew when she was hurting. And I can tell you that I had that same connection with every one of the six ships that I was privileged to command. It's just an amazing phenomenon. When I'm sitting up in the chair or lying in my bunk, which was not all that often, because I moved around the ship quite a bit, not to interfere with its work, but just to talk to people. And it's amazing how the ship connects herself with her captain, if he is at all a sensitive person. So I recommend the book for its historical value. I recommend it for these little pockets of nautical wisdom, which are buried in it. And it also has a wonderful series of photographs that talk about the whole business of clipper ships. And one of the chapters is Challenge, which was the name of one of the clippers, versus Flying Cloud, which was one of the Flying Cloud the Second, which was also one of the clippers, and about the races that these ships had. So the big book this week, The Challenge, Alpha Bravo Charlie Whipple. The magazine this week is my old favorite, the now called Power Ships, from the Steamship Historical Society of America. Used to be called Steamboat Bill, and why they decided to change the name, I don't know the answer to that. It turns out, as I get well into the second half of my own life, that there are more and more things that I don't know the answer to, and I really need to get cracking on collecting all of those Irish pennants of things that I don't know and I should know something about. The article, the lead article in the, or one of the lead articles in the magazine for this week, is about the NASA's retrieval vessels. They had two ships built that were used to, in particular, collect the booster rockets from the shuttles. And there's a very large article about all of that with some wonderful photographs. And my own observation, just looking at these ships, is that they look a little unseamanlike. Fenders hanging over the side when the ship is underway, things like that, which always catch my attention. Anyway, Power Ships is a membership organization, belongs to a membership organization called the Steamship Historical Society of America. I've been a member now, I think, for about 50 years. And I recommend membership if it is something in which you are interested, just as I recommend a subscription to the magazine Naval History, which comes from the Naval Institute. Moving on to away from literature, books, and magazines, let's get into a couple of other things that I have on my checklist for today. The next week, the 8th of November, is Election Day. And you all have heard me pontificate, and you've heard me use the language, if your ballot has fallen down behind the radiator, go ahead and take the risk and reach back down there and pull it out. I think that I always say every time we have an election day coming up that this is a very important election, and certainly that is no less important in this one that we have here. It's a midterm between the halfway through the administration of the current commander-in-chief And those are always particularly significant because often power shifts in either the House of Representatives and or the Senate. So get that ballot out, fill it out, send it in by the deadline so that your ballot counts. Washington State is an all mail-in ballot state. There are places where you can drop your ballot into a drop box, but there are no polling places that you can go and actually talk to the poll workers. I really like that system. I like to go and visit with the poll workers, thank them for their work, and just to get a flavor for the whole elective process, which is so precious to us in this country. So in connection with that, I do not, of course, give you any recommendations as to where you should go. That each one of you must make that particular decision for yourself. It is none of my business for whom you vote. That's why we have the secret ballot in this country. And so, but I will tell you that I do not belong and am not registered with either political party. And in Washington State, you need not do that. So I vote according to my own conscience as to who I think is going to do the best job, regardless of their party affiliation. But somehow or other, I got on an email mailing list for the Democratic Party. And I haven't gone down to the bottom and checked the box that says, take me off the mailing list. Because I just haven't had the time for it, and I can afford the time to delete when it gets a little bit overwhelming. And it did. It got really overwhelming on behalf of the candidate for the Senate vacancy in the state of Georgia, Raphael Warnock, Reverend Warnock. As we get closer to Election Day, Reverend Warnock floods my inbox with pleas for money, threats that he will have my commander-in-chief get in touch with me if I do not donate, promises that I will get a telephone call from that same commander-in-chief should I donate, and grave warnings at about now up to about eight times a day. I looked at my email traffic before I came to the Gene Bosch studio this morning, and I think there were about eight or nine messages from Raphael. I think that Raphael and his political advisors may want to think through this because there is a certain amount of resentment that is beginning to build up in my otherwise charitable soul. Now, I'm not eligible to vote in Georgia, and I don't know whether I would vote for Raphael or for his opponent if I were in the state of Georgia, or whether I would vote for the Libertarian or somebody else. That doesn't make any difference. What does make a difference is that you get your ballot and you fill it out and you send it in, and you send it in on time. The 11th of November, which comes after my next broadcast and where I will be talking a little bit about it, is Veterans Day. So, but because I'm a veteran and because most of Captain Joe's people are veterans or are related to veterans, it is important that we be ready to recognize that day in the fulsome of time, and we will talk about that next week. I'm a great believer in things like designated parking places. Whenever I go on to a military base, if there are parking places designated, for example, that say 06 and above, I will always slip my, Mercedes, not Fiat, Mercedes. I'm going to talk about Fiats in just a second. Mercedes into that slot. because I've earned that right, I've earned that privilege, and I use it. So right out in front of the Gene Bosch studio is a place which I have come to believe belongs to Captain O'Brien, Truman O'Brien, my friend and colleague, and whose broadcast always precedes mine right here on The Voice of Vashon. He does two broadcasts on The Voice. One is a morning scramble with his daughter Molly, and the other one is a program called Brown Briefly, which comes on just before Susan, which are all recorded, and which I had to cut short today because it was cutting into our time together. So I've come to believe that the spot right out in front of the Voice of Vashon studio is Truman's. And somehow or other, they have been people who have not recognized that particular privilege. It's important to me, seriously now, I've been funning just a little bit, but it is important to me because Truman is having a great deal of trouble still getting around. He still can't stand up straight. He is on my binnacle list every single week. And because I am his Captain Joe, I get to tell him, Truman, you're not standing up straight, which reminds me to stand up straight as well. So the next step is to get a little sign, and we're going to put it out front. And then the step, and it will say Captain O'Brien, and that will be his parking place. Right now, in front of the Gene Bosch studio, Truman has already left, but in his place is a somewhat raggy, taggy, island-type truck. Dark green, and the chrome that tells me what make of truck it is fallen off. That's an island truck. Island truck is one you don't take off the island, because if you do, you'll get caught by the state patrol almost immediately. Usually they don't have current tabs. Usually a fender is falling off, that kind of thing. That's an island truck. I do not own an island truck, by the way. I have a truck, a four-wheel drive vehicle. You have to have a truck if you live on the island. Now on to, quickly, to a very interesting article that I came across in my review of traffic this morning to collect together things about which we all want to talk and which I know that you are incredibly interested. I know that one thing you're interested in is that if I can tell a story directed right at you that also makes you laugh and makes you smile and makes you feel just a little bit better about yourself, then I have accomplished my mission, part of my mission. So this particular was a trivia message. And it said, what is the most expensive car in the world and how much does it cost? And it listed four prices. So the four prices, the lowest price was $9.7 million. And so I checked $9.7 million, and I opened what I thought was going to be the answer. And instead of giving me the answer, I had to go through a long list of jiggery-pokery, including many ads, before I got to the answer. And I said, well, I'm not going to do that. Tant pis. But there was a photograph of the car, and the photograph, it appeared to me as if this was a car built in Italy. I don't care how expensive that car is. I will never own another Italian car. At one time in my life, when I was stationed here, I owned for a short period of time, and far too long was that time, a Fiat Spider. And it was among the three of the worst motor cars that I have owned. And I've owned a number of cars. It must be truthfully reported with it. Most of those have been Mercedes. And out of all of those Mercedes, one of them was a real dog. But that's another story for another time, as is also the Studebaker Lark, which was my third really crappy car. So I looked at this thing. I said to myself, Captain, that must be, that's the way I talk to myself sometimes. Captain, that must be an Italian car. And my guess is that it is worth about $9.7 million, or that's the drive it off the showroom floor price. But I'm not going to track my way all the way through the message to find the answer. And what I'm going to report here is that that little Fiat Spider was really an SOS vehicle, and it convinced me that I will never own a Lancia or a Ferrari or any other of those very expensive Italian cars. They are built to an entirely different construction philosophy, engineering philosophy, than, for example, the products that come from Stuttgart, which, of course, are the Benzes, Mercedes. If you own an Italian car, I am not being offensive. I am just reporting to you my own particular biases and my own particular automotive bigotry. I will never own another Italian car. So in the time is moving up, I do not go over time, unlike certain recorded programs. So I'm going to slip in one other piece here, and that is the word or the expression paper captain. I got a piece this morning from one of my most reliable outlets, thanks to Joe Leonard, called G Captain. And I recommend G Captain for those of you who are interested in nautical news. A Washington State tuna boat was caught out in the Pacific, and she had what's called a paper captain. In other words, the real captain was a foreign national, and the captain of record on her certificate of inspection and her other documentation was actually a seaman down on the deck. So the Coast Guard did a boarding. They found this to be the case. The people involved have been arrested. And, of course, any U.S. flag vessel must have a captain who is a United States citizen, and he must be licensed by the United States Coast Guard. So with that, I have once again and far too quickly gotten to 1,300 hours, two bells of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe, as I am always up in the captain's chair for each and every one of Captain Joe's people. I do indeed talk directly to each one of you, because each one of you is precious to me. And we will meet again next week. And next week I will be broadcasting either from Cambridge or from London, depending on how the schedule works out. Because I'm going back for a big celebration at the Scott Polar Research Institute. Truman will be engineering for me. And as always, I broadcast live from wherever I am in the world.